Valley Talk on News Talk 1580 KGAL.
Good morning. It's Valley Talk. I'm Jeff McMahon.
And I'm Hasso Herring.
Yes, you are. Hasso Herring, our guest host every Tuesday, and we're glad he is. He's been a newspaper man all his life and longtime editor of the Albany Democrat Herald, of course. Many of us read his editorials for years and enjoyed the newspaper while it was under his direction. J&J Electric is sponsoring Valley Talk today. J&J Electric in Albany is open for business. They do have reduced hours because of the pandemic, 8:30 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon until further notice. That's 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Shoppers are encouraged to call ahead if you can to ensure mandated social distancing. You can browse online, of course, at their website, j-jelectric.com. Call or email. Staff is ready to serve you. Stay well, stay safe. Let J&J Electric help you with your planning and special projects. That's J&J Electric in Albany. I would expect they've been getting a fair bit of business and that people stuck at home with not much to do probably can look around and see projects they'd like to do, and J&J Electric could be involved. So thanks to them for sponsoring our Valley Talk program. Hasso, as we open up today's program, I wanted to play for you some audio that we shared at one point during the morning update this morning. What you'll be hearing is a question from a CNN reporter to President Trump, questioning his early response to the coronavirus crisis, the things that he said, and then you'll hear President Trump's response to that reporter. Here it is.
What do you say to Americans who are upset with you over the way you downplayed this crisis over the last couple of months? We have it very much under control in this country. The coronavirus is very much under control in the USA. It's going to disappear. It's like a miracle. It will disappear. At March 4th, we have a very small number of people in this country infected. March 10th, we're prepared. We're doing a great job with it. It will go away. Just stay calm. It will go away. What do you say to Americans who believe that you got this wrong?
And I do want them to stay calm. And we are doing a great job. If you look at those individual statements, they're all true. Stay calm. It will go away. You know it is going away, and it will go away, and we're going to have a great victory. And it's people like you and CNN that say things like that, that it's why people just don't want to listen to CNN anymore. You could ask a normal question. The statements I made are, I want to keep the country calm. I don't want panic in the country. I could cause panic much better than even you. I could do much. I would make you look like a minor league player. But you know what? I don't want to do that. I want to have our country be calm and strong and fight and win. And it will go away. And it is incredible, the job that all of these people are doing, putting them all together, the job that they're doing. I am very proud of the job they're doing, that Mike Pence is doing, that the task force has done, that Honeywell and Procter and Gamble and Mike and all of these people have done. I'm very proud. It's almost a miracle, and it is, the way it's all come together. And instead of asking a nasty, snarky question like that, you should ask a real question. And other than that, I'm going to go to somebody else. Please, go ahead.
All right, Hasso, your thoughts.
Well, I mean, I would say he handled that pretty well. That is, the president did. I don't understand why some reporters, especially CNN, I think is notable for that, keep harping on the early response. I think we all understand that. Sure, if the government had banned meetings or just meetings of anybody, like 3 months ago, if they had imposed total isolation on the whole country, the economy would have tanked a lot faster, and the illness, the contagion, might not have gotten that bad. But on the other hand, that's all like 3 months ago. Why keep dwelling on that? The point now is to respond to
the one thing that has bothered me from the beginning was the railing that commentators on CNN were, and I watched some of it. When President Trump closed the borders like he did initially, right away, just bam, you know, and they just thought this was just a terrible thing for him to do. How can he do this? And it was amazing. One person after the next, all these experts that line up on there to give their opinions, just slamming the president. Turns out that was the smartest thing anybody in the world did at that point.
That's right. And,
they don't bring that up, that, oh, we were wrong about that.
Well, I don't know. I guess the cable news companies, especially, I guess, CNN and MSNBC, they need ratings, and they get them from people who, in this particular case, the who hate Trump in the first place, and so they play to that audience. And they, as I understand it, CNN's ratings are way up because since the corona thing.
Yeah, since the corona thing. Prior to that, though, their ratings were actually way
down.
Right. They were actually in some trouble.
The corona thing kind of rescued the CNN.
Yes, I believe so.
But I don't understand why. I mean, I understand why they do it. I think it's wrong to do it the way they dwell on past conduct. That question has been answered. I mean, has been asked a lot of times. The president has tried to answer it the best he could several times. Why keep harping on the thing? It just doesn't make any sense to me. Seems like what we want to do now is whether or not, I mean, we want to know, for example, and for reporters on cable, excuse me, cable news and elsewhere, don't ask. What I want to know is some other things, not what happened 2-3 months ago and what might have been done then and so forth. What I want to know is how many people are sick with this stuff now, and how many? I mean, what we get is the daily count of new cases, especially in Oregon and nationally. We get the daily count of new cases, but it seems to me that this has been going on for a number of weeks now, and the illness is supposed to last a couple of weeks or thereabouts, if you recover, and most people obviously do.
Right.
So the question then is, how many people have recovered? How many people are still sick? And I'm wondering whether or not that number has kind of leveled off. I would expect that as more people get sick and as more people survive and recover, that the total number of COVID-19 cases in the country stays, well, I don't know. I'm hoping that it stays about the same and maybe starting to go down. And even so, I mean, even while that is going on, we're liable to have more and more cases as more and more people get infected. That's going to go on until we have some kind of vaccine or until people have stayed in their own dwellings for so long that they don't even know anybody else anymore and don't have any contact with anybody.
Right. Right.
I mean, that would be a question to ask. And I've asked the Oregon Health Authority online. I'm not sure they even saw the question, but they certainly didn't answer it. The question is, how many people got sick today and how many people got recovered today? That would be a nice thing to know, it seems to me.
Yes.
But we don't get that. And instead, of course, we get, and I don't really blame them. I mean, that's what you have to report in a pandemic like that. You get the number of people who have died today in Oregon, or I mean, since the last time an announcement was made, and that was, you know, the day before. So we had 3 or 4 more cases, deaths, and they tell you who they are. They don't tell you who they are, but they tell you that the age, and on the state level, they tell you whether they're men or women. And you know, the latest report yesterday was 3 additional deaths, and they were men in their, I guess, 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some kind of underlying health condition. They always say that. And I wish they could be a little more specific about what underlying health condition. I mean, they say that, I mean, we've heard this a million times now, that with heart disease and diabetes and other kinds of things, lung illness or asthma or some severe asthma, you're liable to suffer greater fatalities.
Right.
If you get COVID-19. But in the particular cases where they give you the age of the person and the sex, male or women, men or women, and then they tell you that they have underlying health conditions, why can't they say, well, that person had severe heart disease or that person had lung cancer or something like that? I think that would give people a better perspective about what's going on. They say that they can't be any more specific in order to protect people's privacy, which I understand their motive, But, you know, once somebody is
But if you're not revealing someone's name, so we have no idea who it is, you could reveal the condition that they had without giving away anything personal.
You would think so.
Yes.
And in any case, once you're gone, your privacy really doesn't count anymore. I mean, it seems like.
Right.
Maybe it does for the family, obviously, but there's nothing shameful about having an illness like cancer or, you know, right. heart disease or something like that.
It's going to happen to a lot of us listening.
So you could announce that these people, they were in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, they died, and this is the underlying condition that they had. So those are the kinds of questions you can't ask the president, obviously, because he doesn't know any of that stuff. But on the local level and on the state level, I wish that those questions were being asked and, more importantly, were being answered. But so far, no luck on that. One of the things that I see missing in the COVID-19 coverage generally is the whole idea of perspective. Now, you know, when you try to give a perspective on something that is a serious pandemic like that, you're always accused of being Pollyanna, that you're trying to, you're trying to make it more rosier than it is.
Right.
But it seems to me it would be useful to remember that in the country, in the United States alone, not worldwide, just in the country alone, 2.8 million people die every year. So we have 7,700 deaths every year, every day. 7,700 people die in America every day, roughly. And so when you think of the percentage impact of COVID-19 or any particular illness, it gets very, very small. And that knowing that doesn't minimize the seriousness of the pandemic. But it does, I think, give people a little perspective to these
right.
in the sense that they say, well, wait a second, this is a serious illness and we're trying to do things about it. We're trying to isolate ourselves and all that. But really, when you come down to it, it's not the end of the world, no matter how serious it is for the particular people who are infected and then die. For them, obviously, it's the end of the world. But for the country as a whole, or for the state as a whole, society as a whole, it's not the end of the world. And to point that out, I think, would go a long way toward making people feel not so desperate, maybe, as I think some people are beginning to feel. But we're not getting that. Instead, we're getting the steady drumbeat of, okay, so-and-so many more cases today or yesterday. So and so many more deaths yesterday, and that's it. And stay, you know, we get increasing degrees of restrictions. Now in Oregon, we've been told to stay home, but there's no particular consequences if you don't. It makes sense to heed the advice. But if you don't, the police are not going to come after you. They don't stop people in the street and say, hey, how come you're out and about? They don't do that. But they do in some countries, as I understand it.
Hmm.
They have serious consequences in parts of Europe where if you don't stay home, they, you know, do something about it. And I guess I read this morning that in Texas, a minister was conducting services for in violation of a ban
on
big meetings, and he got arrested. Well, I think that raises an interesting question of freedom of religion, a constitutional, privilege, right, the human right.
I think that's a fringe question in that case. I think the main question involved is what was the current edict from the state government in Texas? Was it a stay-at-home thing, and was he violating that? And if he was, then I think that's pretty cut and dried.
Well, it is, but it's still interesting because I mean, normally the ability to go to church. The right to go to church is a bedrock principle of the country. So we'll see how that turns out in Texas. Not that it really concerns anybody here, because I think most of the congregations have started holding services online or in some kind of a remote
online
way.
Or a few have even done the drive-in movie theater style service where everybody pulls into the parking lot and there's a radio transmitter that sends the audio to your radio, like they started doing at drive-in movie theaters in recent years, and everybody can participate in the service but stay in their car so everyone is safely separate.
I hadn't heard about that. Have they done that in this area?
Yes. One or two places have done it in our general area, and it's been done a fair bit nationally. Yeah. It's starting to catch on.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. So, anywho, so let's move on to something that is now a part of people's lives. People who are involved in committees or boards of directors or serve in companies and you're still doing your job remotely. You've been doing a lot of remote meetings, whether it's Zoom video meetings or various other platforms that allow you to chat with multiple people at the same time on video call now, which is neat technology. It's really being used to a great extent at this point now because it has to be. Even the Albany City Council meeting remotely now, and also Herring was a part of a meeting recently last night, right? And they decided to do something, I think, kind of groundbreaking for all.
Well, I wasn't part of the meeting. I just logged in to what the city invited people to log into
to watch.
You're
an observer.
To watch. That's right.
Yes.
And I was surprised that I don't know. I guess the things sort of announced that I had joined the meeting. I didn't mean to join the meeting. I just wanted to listen.
It just means you're there.
So the technology was maybe a little beyond me. I probably did the wrong thing.
No, you did the right thing.
But at least I
that's
muted
how that works.
My microphone on my laptop, so I didn't make any noises during the meeting.
Yes.
The thing is, it was the first time in living memory that the city council held a meeting that allowed the city that allowed the public to take part in some way, that is to watch and to listen, but not to attend. And in fact, there was no place to attend. All the members of the city council and members of the city staff, they all attended this virtual meeting, this remote meeting, from their own offices or from their own houses. And it was kind of interesting to see how this worked. And I was surprised, maybe because I hadn't really participated in stuff like that before very much, or not at all, frankly, that worked extremely well.
Yeah, they got it down real well. I was in a meeting, remote meeting, with a bunch of magicians over this weekend. There were, I think, 550 of us.
Were they all on the screens at the same time?
No, you can rig it up differently. There were 8 people on the screens, and these were the main speakers at this meeting, and the rest of us were just observing. But, there were over 500 of us all hooked up at once. It worked flawlessly. It was great. So same idea.
Well, and I was thinking, you know, considering how much trouble it is to hold a meeting at the city hall, where all, you know, the various city staff members have to attend in case somebody asks them a question or the council needs some information from them. They all sit in the back of the room for almost the entire meeting and usually don't have anything to say.
Right.
So they're wasting a lot of time. And I was thinking this way, maybe they could hold more meetings like that. At least their work sessions could be held like that. It would, first of all, give the city staff members a chance to keep working at their desks. And then if somebody on the council wants to know something, they could just chime in.
Now, this is very similar to the system being used by institutes of higher learning where they're holding their classes remotely. It works basically like this. So you've experienced that. You can see how well it works.
No, it works really well. And, of course, it also, frankly, gives more of the public a chance to take to witness what goes on. Because, you know, everybody with a laptop or a phone, I guess, could even check in to this meeting, whereas
folks who may not want to take the time to drive downtown to Albany to be there in person can sit in their living room and
exactly.
Watch it. Yeah.
And I thought it was sort of, I mean, slightly amusing. You take your amusement where you can get it these days. But noticed that one of the council members, Bill Coburn, in this case, had attended a previous meeting by phone only. And I noticed that when he was on the screen yesterday, I noticed that he had a pretty impressive beard. He had used
Hadn't seen him in a while.
2 or 3 weeks of not being out of the public eye.
Hasso has a screenshot of the meeting on his website, hh-today.com. There you can see it.
Yes. And so, and the other advantage, at least for me, who sometimes has a little trouble hearing stuff in the council chambers because their sound system is so terrible, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of poor.
In any case, in this case, you know, everybody's sitting in front of his microphone talking directly into it, and it's transmitted via the via internet, and I could, you know, everybody who listens to this could hear what people were saying. So it had this kind of remote meeting has all kinds of advantages, and I suggested when I wrote about this on HH Today yesterday that maybe this sort of thing ought to be done more often, even when they don't have the emergency where they try to separate each from each other. So, and they were able to, you know, communicate really easily. The debate was no different from the way it normally is when all the council members are sitting in the same meeting at the same table.
Just no opportunity for fisticuffs, should that come up.
Well, because you're separated. You know, the Albany Council is a very civilized outfit anyway, and they don't usually fight, not with fists anyway.
Not
they sometimes
generally.
Disagree,
yeah.
But they are always always very restrained, it seems to me, even though they have some pretty deep differences of opinion on some issues.
So what they decided, one of the things they talked about and decided to do, they're going to go ahead and potentially loan businesses money to help them get through this coronavirus crisis, and a lot of businesses can really use it.
Well, it's an open question as to how useful this program is going to be. But the city council had a proposal, and they approved this proposal, as you just said, for a loan program that would try to keep some small businesses from shutting down completely after this corona extreme emergency is over. The way it works is that the city set aside $200,000 from the so-called Pepsi Settlement Fund, and then it is partnering with a Eugene-based community lending organization, a nonprofit, to handle the details, and people could apply for up to a loan of up to $15,000 that would be repayable over 5 years. But for the first 6 months, there would be no payments at all. And for the next 6 months, they could pay interest only. And after that, they would pay off the loan. There was, you know, a good deal of debate about that because some of the council members, of course, are concerned about the public, that is the city government, getting involved in private business and all. And but in the end, the approval was unanimous. And in fact, one of the members, Mike Sykes, who was a little doubtful at first about, you know, the program, said, you know, if we're going to do this, is $200,000 going to do much? Is it going to be enough? Maybe we should make it three, four, or more in any case.
Right.
The fund that this is coming out of has up to $2 million left. The council, that is the memo to the council, said $1.65 million, but in the meeting they said two, so anyway, there's some money left. They could extend that program. In fact, there was some discussion about, you know, let's see how this works. If it turns out that we need to increase the allotment to this loan program, then we could make that decision later on.
Sure.
But in the meantime, it was explained to the council by a representative of this nonprofit that is going to handle the applications, how careful they are in evaluating a business. They're not intending to make some kind of a gap loan like this of up to $15,000 to a business that's going to fail anyway. It would have failed anyway, that it was already on its last legs.
Right.
What they want is they would like to encourage people to that have a going business, but they need some capital to restart after they've been shut down for a while. They'd like to be able to help with that. And the rationale was that even though this may cost the city, well, it won't cost the city anything as long as everybody repays the loan in time.
Right.
But there was, the recognition that, some of these loans, I mean, it might not be enough and the business might go under and they can't repay the loan. So there might be some losses in this program. But the council recognized, especially Councilman Rich Kellum talked in those terms, council recognized that the damage to the city from a failed business is going to be a lot bigger than a loss of a $15,000 loan.
Right.
And so that's why they went ahead and did it. And pretty soon, and the representative of this nonprofit explained that when they did something similar in Eugene not too long ago, or in Lane County, I should say, it took them about a week from the first application until the money was in the hands of the people that were supposed to get it. And so it remains to be seen how many Albany-type businesses, how many Albany enterprises are going to apply for this program. The application is supposed to be very simple, no more than two pages, maybe less. Well, less than two would be one, but maybe a page and a half, something like that. Point is, a very simple application, and then a quick turnaround on evaluating the loan application and making a decision on whether to approve it.
Hmm. Hassel Herring, you're our guest host every Tuesday on KGAL's Valley Talk. We'll get back to other things from Hassel's website, hh-today.com, that we'll chat about right after a quick break.
Looking to save money on lighting fixtures, lamps, shades, special gifts, home and garden decor? Larry and Marge Tomlin, owners of J&J Electric, invite you to see the high quality and low prices at J&J Electric. J&J has been in the electrical business for over 50 years, so you know their products and knowledge are the best. Visit J&J's spectacular showroom. The hometown folks at J&J Electric appreciate your business. At your service for over 50 years. J&J Electric, South Pacific and 22nd in Albany.
Before railroads had tracks that traversed the entire nation, there was a place the rail lines came to an end. In 1859, the tracks stopped here, and that meant this city was an important place for settlers to change modes of transportation to make the trip westward. The story is today's edition on the American Countryside. A Farm in the Countryside podcast, we're talking about the stories, tips, and trends affecting agricultural and rural America. What can you expect in the markets? How do you evaluate new technology? What are the latest trends when it comes to successful crop and livestock operations? Those topics and many more are our weekly focus with guests from across the nation. Farm in the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Find the Farm in the Countryside podcast on the AgriTalk app or just use your favorite podcast platform. And you can follow our show on Facebook. Catch Farm in the Countryside for a weekly look at the stories affecting rural and agricultural America.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you were able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Joe House knows the history of St. Joseph, Missouri very well. About 160 years ago, this was an important city, and Americans moved west.
St. Joe in 1860 is bustling. We are one of the three major routes on the Oregon-California Trail.
The railroad arrived in St. Joe in February of 1859, making this the western terminus of the rails at the time. Crowds were taking those trains here as a jumping-off point to head across the Missouri River and westward.
The trains, to some stories, are backed up 7, 8, 12 blocks. Sometimes you have to wait a month to get across the ferry on the Missouri River.
Getting people and messages to the West Coast took lots of time. Sailing meant a trip around the tip of South America or an overland portage across the Isthmus of Panama. A central overland route straight across the continent from Missouri to California would work, but there were still many unknowns.
The central route was estimated 10 days. That's what brought the entrepreneurs of Russell's, Major, and Waddell together to think, maybe we could do this. But there was a prize that they were doing this for, the government mail contract.
And that contract could be worth up to $1 million a year. Russell, Majors, and Waddell had an idea of how to accomplish the mission.
What if we put together a relay horse route across the central route even though it's not tried and true because of weather, hostile Indians, could we get that contract?
They began to form what we know as the Pony Express.
I think all told, they had close to 400 horses and maybe 200 riders, but we don't know the true extent of the riders because the records were destroyed in a fire.
That great horseback relay race of messages crisscrossing the western U.S. began right here 160 years ago. More next time as we travel the countryside. In St. Joseph, Missouri, I'm Andrew McCray.
Detox can be fun. White Wind Superfoods in downtown Corvallis creates organic, fresh, delicious smoothies and juices, as well as detox plans and workshops. Their mission is to bring nourishment to you in a delicious form. A great selection of tasty hot drinks, too. Now you can eat and drink, not just to survive, but to thrive. Your new favorite spot, White Wind Superfoods on Madison between 2nd and 3rd in downtown Corvallis. On the web at whitewindsuperfoods.com.
The news you need, smart talk, and just enough sports. That's what you'll get from News Talk 1580, KGAL.
Back to Valley Talk on KGAL. Jeff McMahon, Hasso Herring. Hasso's with us every Tuesday, and we enjoy his visits and enjoy his website, hh-today.com. On his site, he addresses various topics. Something we wanted to talk about, and I'm not sure that this is on your site or not, Hasso. I don't remember seeing it on there. But school possibly being canceled all year long in our state. Is that really a possibility? Could they go that far? I know they did it in California, right?
Well, I'm not sure about California, but in Oregon, that only developed overnight, and I didn't have anything on it until I read about it this morning.
Yeah.
It appears that the Department of Education, the Oregon Department of Education, has given school officials around the state some guidance about distance learning for the rest of the school year, and that's because there's a growing possibility that schools would never reopen the school year. You remember that the governor closed the Oregon schools until through April 28th. And now the likelihood is that this closure of all public schools, all schools, is going to continue past April 28th, which means May and June. And that would be it for the school year. So no more school this school year, which I don't know if that's ever happened before. I mean, I don't know if that was done during the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918 or 19, if schools were closed or if they were closed for that long, I don't know. And I read this morning that at the turn of the 20th century, or around 1900 or so, the big tuberculosis epidemic. And it was killing a lot of people, so I don't know if they were doing the same thing then. But so now it looks as though the schools are going to be closed for the rest of the year. And everybody's trying to figure out what that means in terms of, well, in a lot of terms, but the main one is, what about kids learning anything? And so I guess the Department of Education is trying to figure out some way to organize schools or to mobilize schools in such a way that they can put enough distance learning online that students would still learn something. Of course, that raises the question about people who don't, our students whose families don't have access to online resources. And that would mean, of course, I don't know what it would mean exactly, but for one thing, it might mean setting up internet hotspots around town. So even if students or their families could somehow manage to get a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop or something, if they don't have one, they could go to those places and sit in their cars and hook up to some kind of a learning program. So that would be one thing. But the other thing, of course, it raises a long-term question. And that is this. If distance learning actually works, in the sense that people can still, after being out of school for practically half a year, if they can still graduate and the graduation would mean about the same thing, and they could still advance to the next grade, and that advancement would still mean what it normally means, then it kind of calls into question the whole idea of the way we've organized, of the way we've organized public education.
Right.
I mean, over the years, you know, as the internet has advanced, there have been calls for people who say, look, I mean, the internet, you can teach people online. You don't have to have all these buildings. You don't have to have all this expense. And people have always poo-pooed that idea and say, no, that's really important to have people in class and to be interacting with each other in a personal way and to be have the teacher in front kind of leading or, you know, leading the discussion and directing it in certain ways. So that's all a very important part of growing up and of getting an education. Well, if it turns out that distance learning now can accomplish the same thing, then we have to wonder, what about all these buildings that we have? I mean, you remember that Albany, for example, is spending about $180 million over these 2 or 3 years to refurbish a bunch of buildings and build two new schools, up to $50 million each per school. And so, I mean, if that was, if distance learning now shows us that that really isn't absolutely necessary, well, that would raise all kinds of questions for the future. I'm not suggesting that it's unnecessary to have school buildings, not at all. But, you know, as money gets tight, especially after this economy has crashed the way it is crashing, then what do you do from then on over the next 10, 20 years? There has to be some discussion about this now. But first of all, we have to see if it works. If after, there's some, after this school year ends, there's some way of testing or some way of determining what the result has been of whatever distance learning is put into place, and it turns out that, well, it really didn't work, then that would be, give you one answer, and it'd give you a very important answer. It would kind of justify the reason we've been doing it the other way for, you know, a century or more. And so that discussion has to be held, and the chances are it will be.
Let's talk about the possibility of City of Albany being a sanctuary to gun rights.
You know, one of the things about this corona thing is that everything else has kind of faded into the background. Nobody ever talks about, for example, global warming anymore, or about...
Global warming, what's that?
Or about, taking down the dams on the Snake River, or stuff like that. And, of course, before the coronavirus hit the news and hit everybody and confined everybody at home, there was a good deal of discussion in Oregon about the Second Amendment, about gun rights, and about more restrictions on gun ownership and so forth. And as a result of that, the city council a few weeks ago, before this corona pandemic hit, asked the city attorney to prepare, in any case, a resolution that would declare Albany to be a sanctuary city for the Second Amendment. And so the other day, that kind of disappeared because it disappeared from the agenda of the city council. And I wondered about it the other day. And so I asked the city attorney what the deal was with that. And he said, well, you know, it is still coming up. That's still the plan. It had been scheduled to be on the city council agenda on March 25th, but of course that meeting was canceled. And that's when I wondered about it. And so I asked Sean Kidd, the city attorney, and he told me, no, it's we're working on it, and it's going to come up. We were holding off on discussing this, hoping that we would someday have a meeting where everybody could be present in person. But since that's not going to happen now for a good while, I would guess, he said that, well, maybe we'll have it even if nobody can be there in person. maybe we'll have that discussion on April 8th. So that's something to wait for. Something that has nothing to do with the coronavirus, as far as I know, but it does have. It may have at least some remote relationship to the pandemic, because in the pandemic, the reports are that gun sales have skyrocketed around the country, and presumably in Oregon as well. And in fact, the Albany Rifle and Pistol Club took note of this not too long ago when it said. It was keeping its range open and telling people that, and saying, and the reason was that, a lot of people were buying guns for the first time. That meant that they would need training, and the training would then have to be provided someplace, and the range would, of course, be the perfect place to do it.
Sure.
And so that's why. So there is a connection here, I guess. But in any case, on April 8th, we'll see if it comes up, and then we'll see what the result is. The question is, does this really have any effect? And my guess would be no, not legally. But it would be an expression of the city council. It would allow the council to give its opinion on what they think of various restrictions that were being proposed at the state level at the time in the legislature. That, of course, died when the legislature adjourned because the Republicans had walked out. But there are a number of petitions, initiative petitions, that are pending that might show up in November that also have to do with gun rights and that would put additional restrictions on what people can do with guns, what people have to do about guns. And the other thing is with the pandemic going and with social distancing supposed to be practiced, very hard for the petitioners to gather signatures. So chances are, the assumption is that most of those measures that were being proposed are not going to be able to make the required number of signatures by July 2nd, which is the deadline, the constitutional deadline by which it has to be done. And so if they can't get the signatures, those initiatives are not going to appear on the ballot either. All of these things in the face of the corona thing, just they all kind of fade into the background. You realize that they can't really be all that important. I mean, depending on your outlook and your personal orientation and all that, maybe they are still quite as important as before. But at the moment, it's just a question of survival for most people, economic survival and mental survival, but because they're stuck at home for so long. Let's just see what happens. The other thing about the other thing to be said about this is that even though a lot of things are shut down, not everything is shut down. I mean, for example, the city planning process in Albany is still churning along, maybe not as efficiently or as fast as before, because I think maybe some of the people are working from home. Not sure about that. But in any case, they had an application not too long ago for a site plan review and a floodplain development approval for an apartment complex of 260-some units.
Right. I saw you wrote about that on your site.
Yeah. On the east side of I-5, on the southeast side of the Knox Butte roundabout. That would be, I think, 264 apartment units to be built there in several separate buildings with, hundreds of parking spaces and all kinds of appurtenances that go along with that big development. And that kind of is in keeping with what's been going on in that part of town in Albany for a good long time. North of the roundabout, north of Knox Butte, they've built two big apartment projects. One of them is completed and being occupied, that is being rented, and the other one is still nearly complete, I would guess, or parts of it anyway are nearly complete. And all of that reminds us how smart the school district was in expanding the school building capacity in that area.
Yep.
I mean, they built Timber Ridge School, and now they're building Meadow Ridge School, almost done, almost ready to be occupied. Of course, they can't be occupied now. But anyway, the planning process is taking place the way it always is. And, you know, people have a chance to comment about this apartment project. It fits the zoning, so there's nothing much to argue about. And it's going to be approved by the city staff. No planning commission meeting is required, which is a good thing because the planning commission can't meet anyway. So even though we're, you know, our lives are being disrupted every which way, the machinery of government still continues churning away.
Well, self-service gas has come up recently in the state of Oregon, and apparently now if a service station has struggles with putting a staff together and keeping a staff together to man their pumps, it's possible now, electively, they can choose to allow their customers to serve themselves at the pumps.
That's right. The state fire marshal issued a couple of days, on Saturday morning, I think it was, issued a ruling that said that he was suspending the regulations that ban self-service gas at most gas stations, and at least in Western Oregon, for most people. And the reason was that previously, when there was this big rush of people through the coast, previous weekend, I guess it was, some of the gas station attendants were overwhelmed, and they were so fearful of being contaminated or being infected by corona that they walked off the job, and so all these people supposedly were stranded without getting gas, not able to get gas. So that's why the state fire marshal, under the state law, apparently has the power to impose this regulation or not impose it, and so he decided to suspend it. Since the 1950s, the fire marshal had decided, of course, you remember, that Oregon was not smart enough to run self-service pumps.
Right.
And it would be too dangerous for people to do that. Now, the only other place where that's in effect is New Jersey, and if the 48 other states and the District of Columbia, they all allow self-service gas.
Sure.
And people have not, you know, made gas stations explode, and they've not set themselves on fire and all that kind of stuff. Nope. So it works okay.
Yep.
So in Oregon, as you know, the discussion has from time to time come up whether or not the self-service gas should be allowed. And the argument is always the same. On the one hand, you know, it's a question of freedom and economic necessity and all that. And on the other is that, look, I don't want to pump my own gas, especially when the weather's bad. I want to sit in my car and have somebody do it. And not only that, if you do it, your hands start smelling of gas. You know, I don't want that. And more important, the law as it is, or the regulation is as it is, means that a bunch of people have jobs at gas stations to pump your gas.
Right.
And if that we didn't have that regulation, maybe a lot of gas stations would just drop their employees and look at all the joblessness that would cause, especially among people who are, you know, young, just starting out. Some gas stations in Albany, especially my favorite station, I mean, they hire people from school and the community college. I mean, they're young people and they're eager and they do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just pump your gas. They do your windshield and sometimes your the back window. And sometimes when they're not busy, they'll check your tires. So it's an amazing thing, which you don't see very many places.
No, that's old-fashioned style service, definitely.
I mean, I should say that's Courtesy Corner on Queen Avenue is where I buy my gas.
Yeah, they kind of go above and beyond, sounds like.
And they yeah. do a great job. So chances are, on Saturday when that regulation was announced allowing self-service, I asked the guy, hey, did you hear about this? He hadn't even heard about it. And so he was perfectly happy to pump my gas. And there was no question of self-service there. But, you know, that question is still a hot one in Oregon, because I noticed from the number of comments that the story got that I wrote on HH Today on Saturday. I mean, people are still interested in the subject. Most of the comments seem to be against the idea of allowing self-service for the reasons that I mentioned.
Well, there's another reason nowadays, and that is that at this point, the attendants are keeping the pump clean for themselves and making sure that they're wearing protective hand gear most often and that sort of thing. But if multiple people were handling those pump handles, you don't know who's handled it and if they're infected with something and if they cleaned it off or had their hand. So to me, that even is a greater potential for spreading the coronavirus.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was when I heard about this.
We've got about 1 minute left.
That's the thing I was wondering about, as you say.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I worry about that every time I'm at a store, but a self-service checkout thing, when I punch the buttons,
right,
or even when I use the debit card at the other place, when you punch the buttons, well, I'm not wearing gloves, and nobody's disinfected that punch pad. So anyway, that's something that still has to be debated.
There you go. And maybe we'll debate it next week. Who knows? we'll see about next Tuesday. But
wouldn't that be great if we didn't have Corona to talk about next week?
That would be wonderful. But I got a feeling we'll still have
it. Yeah, you probably will.
Yep. I enjoyed chatting with your wife last week, too, about about her books. It was wonderful. We had a great time.
Great.
Then I learned a lot about you. But unfortunately, time has run out, so we can't talk about it.
The new moon is called Sinahi. It's also a distinctive piece of native jewelry patterned after the crescent moon. It's a beautiful name, spelled S-I-N-A-H-I. It's also the name of a business in the valley. One of the very best landscape maintenance workers in the valley, Jose Garcia, is the project manager and owner of Sinahi Landscaping Maintenance. Year-round, full-service maintenance and special projects, all done with a smile. His clients are all smiles, too. Jose is involved with every job himself. He takes the time to do it right, and his contract rates are so reasonable, you can actually quit doing all that yard work yourself. Call for a free estimate, 928-6762. Sinahi Landscaping Maintenance, 928-6762. Like them on Facebook, and remember the name, S-I-N-A-H-I, Sinahi Landscaping Maintenance.
Strong families are the foundation for successful communities. When children are supported and nurtured, they thrive. ABC House provides awareness programs that prevent child abuse before it starts. By promoting prevention activities in your local community, you're helping ensure that all kids have the happy, healthy, and safe childhoods they deserve. Call ABC House to learn more about our child abuse prevention programs at 541-926-2203 or visit abchouse.org.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Alrighty.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing. It really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Willamette Living Magazine brings you the best of our special area in print and online. Locally owned and operated, Willamette Living is the lifestyle magazine of Oregon's Willamette Valley from Eugene to Portland. Every other month brings a new edition packed with engaging local stories, beautiful photography, and offerings from our neighbors in business. Visit WillametteLiving.com to read the current issue online, find out about advertising your business, or subscribe now and have every issue delivered to your home or office. Willamette Living Magazine.
Your first choice in local news, sports, and smart talk. This is News Talk 1580 K.